I want to welcome everyone to today's webinar A&R sessions. I am honored to have these four gentlemen here who have helped shape the culture for decades. That even is an understatement. These are some of the most successful entrepreneurs who have contributed to multiple sectors of, you know, the music business, whether it be music publishing or as a label executive or producer, songwriter, manager, content producer. So, you know, again, to say that these gentlemen are qualified to have the conversation that we're going to have is an understatement. So before we get started, again, we have Mr. Deion Wilson, Mr. Kiambo Hip Hop Joshua, Mr. Christopher Hicks, and Mr. Michael Shaw Money XL. It's Clairvoy, correct?
Yes, right. That's right, Clairvoy.
There you go. Look at that. So thank you, gentlemen, for agreeing to come on and have this conversation. How's everybody doing?
Good, man.
We good, man.
Good as can be.
Great. So I want to start us off with the kind of the overarching point of the conversation. And before I do, I want to recognize Jamila and Brianna for conceptualizing the show Must Be Paused, which actually got us to this point, which got us to the Blackout Tuesday last week, where our community came together to have meaningful conversation and discussion about change. But as a result, we've seen a lot of things like press releases and social media posts and multi-million dollar funds and debates and ideas about musical reparations and action committees and task force, et cetera, et cetera. But I want to really get to the conversation of how do we really achieve tangible change with where we're at right now. And so I want to open it up, and whoever wants to kind of start the conversation can go ahead.
Who goes first?
Go ahead and jump out there, D. I'll follow you.
Well, first thing, I think all of us on here, one thing we don't need is necessarily the education, which is normally the first step, is really understanding the way the business shifts, change, and experiencing the way the business works. And to put it right up to the modern moment, it's just, you know, we have to be able to begin to separate capitalists and racism, right? And know the difference, right? Because, you know, it's a business. And you have, you know, if I just jump out there really early for the climate and really talk about things we don't talk about, you have people that are racist, but they're not necessarily in our way. And then you have certain people who are really, you know, headstrong capitalists that will try and make a dollar, you know, regardless to anything. And I think one of our biggest obstacles is the systematic racism that has been in the businesses for so long that you don't even necessarily have to believe in racism to capitalize off of it. And so, you know, with that being said, I think, you know, this is the time period where we have to now educate ourselves on things to do that will remove those obstacles, because they're not as present as we once thought, you know, just because you can distribute music yourself, you can build leverage, you can build businesses, and, you know, whereas maybe 40 years ago, we had to go through these systems. We didn't have a choice. You know, you couldn't get your music out. You couldn't even get the audience to hear what you got. So I always look at it now and I go, all right, some of these people that get in our way are distractions to what we could do if we all just came together and put together really good educated plans. I know everyone on this panel I've crossed paths with in this business. And I think we all, you know, share a sentiment, and we do our best to be very professional to move ahead and gain the respect of all people. But at a certain point, we also have to make some different moves that are not based on people who may are in our way.
I think you know, to go on top of what Dee said, this is a scary time for anybody who runs creative infrastructure. Like, once you lose control of distribution, you know, whatever your business model was, it's over. So I don't care if it's records, film and television, editorial, it doesn't matter. Like, once the maker has the ability to go straight to the consumer, then that creates pandemonium and it creates fear. And I think that that's some of the trickle down that we see in some of these corporate institutions. Part of the step you got to take before you get mad is try and understand why someone is acting the way that they're acting. And more often than not, what I see is fear. I see gentlemen who have had on this call, who've had success in all different mediums inside of these buildings. So what that says to me is that this guy can do 3 jobs. He can do 5 jobs. He can do 10 jobs. And when I barely know my skill set, that evokes fear. I think the second part to this is, I think that once you can grasp that degree of understanding, and you realize that you don't need the caretaker anymore to figure out how to move forward, and the caretaker himself realizes that he's just a bank and that he's just a counter, then his moves become strategic. You don't have a head of Black music, or you don't have an urban department, or you don't have centrally urban music. It's because they have figured out that they could count. And they would rather make the bet on analytics that speak to them as to someone's gut. You know, all these guys on here have broken talent, whether it's producer talent, songwriting talent, creative talent, artist talent, and where we had to bet on our gut and we had to bet on a hunch, or we at least at a minimum had to develop. All the things that we brought to the market were developed. The establishments have replaced people like us with counters, and they're feeling the effects of that because, you know, just because you were able to put out a hit today doesn't mean that you can continuously put out a hit. Things that guys like us are proficient at doing. And so they'd rather live with that gap than deal with, you know, part of the brushback of a Black man having an opinion, or a Black man having a very strong opinion, or not being docile, or not being willing to jump in front of that bus because they say jump in front of that bus. I'm sorry, D, I'm wavering between DEFCON 3 and DEFCON 5, but I'm sure I'll get there as we keep going. But by all means, my gentlemen, please chime in.
No, I definitely agree. I think it's definitely 2 things. Is one, like when we outside, like right now, all of us entrepreneurs, because, you know, it didn't work for us inside that system. Like, it was things we was trying to do. It was, you know, communication. It was a lot of things that didn't work for us as a Black creative, strong executive to have a voice. You know what I mean? Because, you know what I mean?
But Hop, with the exception of breaking talent, that did work. That did work for us.
Hand. Even when we go back in, it is like, what you got? What you going to do? Right. You know what I mean? So it's always
what you got next.
Do it again.
What I did and what, you know what, I mean? And what could I do with what we have here? You know what I mean? And the whole direction of how we deal with our you know, ourself and our own people, you know what I mean? That's always a difference. And they use us as a bridge as far as, okay, you could go get those guys because we're not really trying to talk to, let's say, 50 Cent in his case. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't want to. It was like that was off the market. Nobody wanted to go close. Craig was like shaking in his boots. People wanted to go, he was going to have a bodyguard. You know what I mean? It's those type of things that we end up being the people only dealing with that. But then when it comes to the office and numbers and budgets and really signing shit and we want to do this or that, you know, that's when
the access is limited. You can't see it. You don't know the real numbers. You don't really know the overhead. You don't really know the playing field to know how to level it. And you're not dealing with numbers. Like, what's the yearly budget for this? What's allocated for that? We're not knowing the information. We just throwing into it. And they see if it stick with us, and if it don't, they let us go. But everybody else is contracted in for however long they want to be, you know?
And, you know what it is, Eddie? With the white executives, they get the benefit of, well, he's done this, 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 and this, so he can probably figure this out. And with Black executives, it's, well, he's done this, this, and this, but he's never done this before. And that benefit of doubt is not extended.
Right. I agree.
So, I mean, the truth is that we got to understand what's going on. We see money being donated and things being put out there and change that they're saying they want to see. So it starts with, you know, looking at your whole company. I know a lot of people are home on furlough. 60% of companies is downsized. But when you go back in, how are you balancing that downsize? How is it balanced, you know, between what they call minorities, blacks, Hispanics, and who are you allowing to come in as the next fold? And this is the time to actually bring them in and groom them up and actually grab some people who's out here still looking for opportunity. You know, this is the time to do it, is to give back to the industry that has always given to the industry, which is us out here on the playing field.
Well said.
So speaking on the money aspect of it, what we've seen from a lot of these companies, whether it be, you know, your major labels or your DSPs or otherwise, or people wanting to donate $100 million, $25 million, this amount of money to these, you know, to Black Lives Matter or some other charitable organization, what does that really mean at the end of the day when you say that there's no money to pay your employees, or there's no money to do this or money to do that? Give me your perspective on that.
I want to know who's being held accountable. Who's going to be the person that's saying that this fund went this way? And then when you're saying you're giving money for streaming and all of that, let's talk about some of the artists that paved the way for us, the special eds and all the guys that came in before us that didn't get the fair shake of the deal, but they hit the suffering so we can win. What about those guys? You know what I mean? So where are we giving this money to and where's it going? But we got a fund of a music business and a whole bunch of retired people that can't grab nothing. Royalties, streams, they can't get nothing unless it's a show in Berlin or across seas right now. And that ain't even happening. So we gotta really think about, you know, and have access to say where it's being donated. I mean, Black Lives Matter, what causes that? Where's that cause? You know, let me just say this. Money was supposed to go to Haiti through Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, and never made it there. So the accountability is very important for me. You know what I mean? A lot of people could put up the little logo or their brand and saying this is what they're doing, but there's nobody who's behind it that's saying, yo, this actually happened and we can see the difference. And I want to be a part of that committee that knows that this is happening.
I think companies are just trying to simply protect their narrative. I don't think the incentive is really there. I think obviously we know what was happening with Warner. So you put out $100 million, or at least you put out $100 million press release to protect $2 billion or a few billion dollars. Any of us would do that any day of the week. But any of the other companies are simply trying to protect the narrative, to get out in front of the narrative, to be pro, at least to appear to be proactive. And I think that most of them assume, as with every instance around people of color, is that this will blow over.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, I think they're seeing that it's not, and I think that's why they're donating money, because they're seeing the numbers could get moved away. Like you said, they lost distribution. So now, once people start taking up and going to other places, like right now, all of us is entrepreneurs. Like, none of us is in those systems. Mm-hmm. All of us is doing things outside. And once, you know, if that money was to go to the right place where we was to have some Black-owned form of distribution or something in that way, that will tilt the whole scale. So they have mm-hmm. to make it seem like they, you know, they with us, because we could actually, in a point where we do have the power to really hit the switch, I feel, you know what I mean, and really start to shift things towards, you know, at least money funneling back to us, you know what I mean? Because, like, when you look at hip-hop, it comes from the poorest places. And that don't make no sense. You know what I'm saying? It's like Bronx is like, it's nothing worse than the Bronx as far as poverty goes. And that's the birthplace. So it's like, where's the trickling down coming from? So I think even on that side of it, it's mm-hmm. like, y'all need to help out these communities that y'all just taking, you know, the famous person from there that could rap. And he's, you know, exploiting the whole community. But look at Chicago, look at Long Beach, look at, you know what I'm saying, Harlem, Bronx, all these places. This is where Atlanta, these are the places that's, you know, in the worst conditions, but these are the places that most of these artists come from. These are where the communities that most of the music is being purchased at. And it's like, you know, they don't have to hold no accountability for that. You know what I mean? Like, when the artist is over, it's like, we still got to deal with the artists. We still got to go to these neighborhoods and stuff like that. Like, they don't have to see.
You still got
to
be you.
Yeah.
We still got to coexist. Yeah.
Like, most white executives, I don't even see them after I'm not working with them. So I know the artists don't see them after they're not working with them. So it ain't no accountability. It ain't like no, okay, I got to take care of this guy's life because I know he got two kids. I know, you know what I'm saying, what he might have to go back to if it don't work. Like, that type of thing don't really sit with them. Like, that's, you know what I mean? They, you know, the rate that their music don't work at is like, there's no way they could care for the people, the artists, in that sense, when it's a 10% rate of, you know what I'm saying, 1 out of 10 records is doing good. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that shows you that number 9 artists is not doing well, and, you know, and they move on, and they don't got no relationship with them, so they're not held accountable.
Mm-hmm. And speaking on accountability, you know, personally, I look and I go, okay, 100 million. Well, I could do math, which is 100 million subscribers a month, $10 average. It's $1 billion coming in. 70% roughly is going out to the master owners, right? So I don't just, you know, what about where's the rest of the money going? And how is it not trickling down to the, if we agree that Black music is now pop music, and historically, if we look at these catalogs, you know, a good chunk of it comes off the Black community and minority communities, you know, not to say that there aren't white stars also, but my point is, in 2020, we know what's moving the needle. And streaming didn't even exist back then, by the way. So the metric has changed as far as how this money is coming in. And there's not even a real explanation of what's happening with that money. Because I look at it and say, hey, you know, is that our money anyway? You know, I know what we all on this panel have generated.
Mm-hmm. I definitely know that too.
And I know what we have received is a fraction mm-hmm. of it. So I go, you know, if you take my cake and then you offer me a crumb and then I got to chase the crumb.
Yep.
Again, I go, let's take a step back. Why do you want to give that money now? Because you didn't want to give it 3 months ago, 6 months ago, mm-hmm. a year ago, 2 years ago. Didn't even want to give an extra $50,000 for the young A&R that you know is trying to just feed his family. Mm-hmm. And that's where I go, hey man.
Yeah. When does the love get paid forward? You know, what does it take me to have to want to leave the company to get the actual salary I deserve? When does it come forward? It always comes after, you know? So the whole, we got to get ahead of it now, you know, cause everyone is getting behind it. I'm leaving this company and now they want to double me down before I leave. I'm like, wait a second. Why you couldn't do that before I left, you know, or offer that as a bonus or offer the promotion, you know, but it always takes that sacrifice and that commitment for you to just feel yourself and understand your self-worth to be able to say, all right, I'm gonna go do this, and then they actually give you what you're worth. So we got to get ahead of that, you know. And I think this is a clear indication that, you know, there's a lot of executives that suffer from that. You know, there's a lot of clauses that we don't get that were permitted to others. You know, retirements and things that happen for after we leave this, you know, when we're down the road and don't have to be doing music, you know. And even unions, you know, so it needs to be balanced out so people can survive and all contributors can keep going.
Hey, Eddie, I take all things equal. You know what I mean? I really would. If I could feel like a Black executive, I could have success and be rewarded for the success that I had, like my white counterpart, I'd be good with that. If it was equal. I'm just looking, I don't need the fish. I need the fishing pole. So if all things equal, if for you to, I'm thinking beyond myself. I'm looking at the guys on this panel and I'm looking at the artists that they broke. And if they were a different skin color, they would be running places. Really? There's no if, ands, and not even just with, let me pause. Not even just with the artists that they broken, but with the Rolodex. And I'm not just talking about the people who will pick up the phone, but the people who actually mm-hmm. pick up the phone and move. Mm-hmm. If we went just one by one through some of these companies, one, show me our white counterparts that move without the backing. Right. Who have ever put it up without the backing, without the backing of an infrastructure, without being held down by an infrastructure? Right. We could do it. We could go building for building. And then just to really look at the ones who have even put up any numbers in comparison to the gentlemen that are on this panel today, it's an atrocity. But it's designed to build that way. Mm-hmm. You guys build it up to the point where we can monetize it, and then we will replace you with cheaper labor who are just happy to be in the building, who don't have an opinion, who don't have a perspective, and who are willing to do anything just to be able to come through these doors every day. That's mm-hmm. not what our counterparts experience. I mm-hmm. just take all things equal. If we put up the numbers, reward the numbers.
Yeah, because what they do is they cut to the artist or executive. You know what I mean? Like, they don't directly to them, you know what I mean? And they don't have, like, that executive with them to really, you know, to really help run that machine. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you look at those machines as artist-driven, they got that person, you know what I mean? Or it's either those people, you know what I mean, that's really running it, and they signing the artist, you know what I'm saying? Like, so I think they sort of removed that, and they put it to where, you know what I mean? Because, like, say, for instance, when I was at Columbia 07, and I was the head of Urban. Ed, you was there with me, right?
Yep.
Remember, and I was trying to hire Dion. It looked like I was crazy. And they told me for Urban stuff, I had to speak to Chris Schwartz. Mm-hmm. He was a consultant for Urban. And this was awesome. And Chris Schwartz was, like, still the main guy that they looked to for Urban. And he, at the point, he might have done us a Cypress Hill and Crisscross. You know what I'm saying? It's just like early 90s, you know what I mean? Like around that time, but they took care of him. He mm-hmm. stayed in that system, and he stayed in that mix. And even when I was there years later, after I did Kanye and da-da-da, and they not letting me sign Drake and Cudi and shit like that, they're basically like, wait, see what Chris want to do. You know what I mean? Holler at him. You know what I mean? Like, I almost got a path through him because that's the guy that they know.
You got to catch him on the beach.
In the urban world, you know what I mean? So, you know what I mean? That's like the type of dynamics it is where at least they take care of each other to where none of us last that long to take care of each other. You know what I mean? Like, LA was there for a minute and he brought just about everybody here into different places. You know what I mean? The different positions. Dion was there for a minute. He brought me in.
Yeah. He put all of us.
What we could do, but it haven't been many of us that ever got to that point where they was there long enough to really bring people in to where they feel like they're not screening you when you try to bring in somebody who might not have been an A&R before. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like, oh, nah, let's go with this guy and why don't we use Chris? He's still on payroll. You know what I'm saying? It was stuff like that they was telling me, you know, only to hire him years later, but it was just, they wouldn't believe me to really hire other executives. You know what I'm saying? It was like, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? That's not what we brought you here for. We brought you here, hopefully you can catch one of these big ones and that could justify everything else. So when we there for that purpose. We like, okay, y'all can do all that other stuff and you take this salary and you act like you come to these meetings and we act like you're doing something, but we really just here waiting for you to knock another one out the park. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And that's why he said it comes with the talent. And if we're not there, you know, if that's not happening, we moving on while other, you know, white executives, they would stay there and stay in the mix and be working there and just work on stuff that's on the label, you know what I'm saying? And move up as other people just kind of by default, like other people just fall out and go do their own thing or can't deal with it no more.
But move up with no report card.
They inherited it.
You know what I'm saying? No report cards, no scores. No scores. Ben Sitton.
Well, I wanna toss this in there. I had a conversation with an attorney on the blackout day, right? And he wanted to really discuss, you know, some of the things that's going on. And I said, you really want to discuss it? And, you know, as I brushed over some of my experiences, you know, passively, I just said, listen, what's in your control is this. What are you having artists sign, right? What are you presenting the artists? What are you presenting us as executives and saying, yes, this is okay to sign?
This shit because, is rigged.
I know a lot of executives that the fine print say, shut up. Don't say nothing. Or you ain't gonna eat. And you're not gonna feed your family, right? And there are people that's complicit in this, right? They know it and they allow it, right? And then they just say, hey man, play the game, right? So you got a whole lot of game playing and nobody really can say how they really feel until you just go for it by yourself and you say, forget it, right? So that's the biggest curveball of how we're gonna affect the industry anyway. Until we get a fair entry into the system, which means equal pay as our counterparts, equal security, and the a contract that'll allow us to really say what's wrong and make some changes, right? Because again, I know too many people that I talk to and help counsel and coach, and they really hurt and they really feel oppressed. They feel offended. They feel trapped and they got bills to pay.
Mm-hmm. So the question then becomes, how do we change that? And I was very specific in using, you know, when I put the information out there about this panel and describing all four of you gentlemen with entrepreneur, because the major label stop, whether it be, you know, an executive on the label side or on the publishing side, was after you had already been successful in music publishing or production or artist management or whatever the case may be. So that was just a stop in your career. But for others, that's all we know as executives and employees is relying on, you know, the 15th and the 31st. So how do we get equal pay like our white counterparts? How do we put ourselves on equal playing field now that we have their ear?
I mean, a lot has to do with the lawyers that's doing all the contracts to understand what's going on.
But Shai, everybody's in cahoots.
Yeah.
Lawyers are in cahoots with corporate. It's a cycle, and it's a frustrating question because I don't really believe that it gets corrected on a corporate level. And I don't want to sound like Debbie Downer, but this establishment runs like this intentionally. This is not accidental. And you know, throwing dollars at something, and you're not even throwing dollars within, you're throwing dollars outside of the building. That doesn't empower to control a narrative. That doesn't empower the positioning inside the building. As everybody on this call knows, is that it's a pyramid. And the more you rise up the pyramid, there's less and less room at the top of the pyramid. And that's when you really see the shenanigans. That's when you really get in touch with the bullshit and you start to really understand it's not designed for us. It's really not designed for us to prosper. It's designed to extract from us and for us to move on. It's not, because they know we can do it.
Yeah.
And the last thing somebody wants to come in and have to do is listen to some black man tell them how their department is going to run or else. See, the one thing that the 800-pound gorilla in this room too, Eddie, is all of us had our own power.
Mm-hmm.
Dion's power, hip hop's power, Shaw Money's power didn't come from who they were working for. We weren't an extension of the person we were working for. We came there with our own power base. And that is exceedingly frightening to the person who signed your check and figures, just because I signed your check, when I say jump, you're going to jump. Mm-hmm. Well, we're all black men. We all got testicles at the end of the day. Like, it's just not going to work that way. And all of us know that we made money before we got into corporate America. And we can actually take the tools from corporate America and make even more money outside of it. But they know that, the bottom line is that they know that we all are wholly capable. So if Shai got to work a record, if he got to make it happen, he can find the artist. Then he can figure out a digital plan. If in fact, modern day, there is a radio plan, he got the relationships to go figure that out. He might not have to talk to nobody in the building if they turned him loose with the cash. That makes 40 people useless.
Yep.
That makes the establishment useless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you got an artist, you don't, any of us, we could actually just call each other and get the shit done. Yeah.
That's right.
Especially with a bag. I'm not even asking you to do it on a favor. Just tap into your Rolodex for me because you're betting on the person. I can bet on the people on this panel. That's a frightening position for corporate to be in.
Yeah,
and they're never going to be transparent about it, but it's the truth. We've all witnessed it. I'm a guy who's
trying. We also got to be tighter with each other so we can communicate. And this is true. Those informations and those.
We need those unions and those type of things where, you know, all the black, you know, executives are together, ones that's inside, the ones that's outside. You know what I'm saying? That's really, because there's no, you know, it's not even like,
It's two different kind of black executives, though.
Huh?
It's two different kind of black executives.
No.
Just keep it a buck.
That's inside, that's outside. We got that's okay. Strong enough to play certain roles.
Fair enough.
Like, we all got roles. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Like, everybody got their role in this. You know what I mean? There's certain people that could take care of stuff on a major level when it comes to distribution that people really listen to.
Yep.
You know what I mean? As far as white people listen to, then there's people mm-hmm. that artists listen to who they, those type of people might be out of touch with. And that's what happens. Mm-hmm. It's like the guys that really got the power, they lose touch sometimes of the music and what's going on. So mm-hmm. if they don't bring in the right people and constantly update, you know what I'm saying, what's going on, like say with Baby, he updated because Wayne had another run and he was mm-hmm. able to connect with the younger kids.
Generation,
connect with them directly. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it was like, so it's kind of like that dynamic of older executives being from another generation because black music moves so fast. Mm-hmm. So by the time LA is moving to the next one, he had to bring in Shake. He had to bring in people that mm-hmm. knew what was going on and eventually Jay. You know what I'm saying? That's why that dynamic was probably one of the most powerful dynamics we ever had because mm-hmm. Jay and LA Reid had power. They had voices. They had credibility. Nobody was really fucking with them. Mm-hmm. And that's, to mm-hmm. me, the only time we really, really had power over a company, you know what I'm saying, was when Jay and LA Reid was doing Def Jam.
Yeah, because
if you notice that, you can believe that they noticed that.
Yeah, they're people, and that's what it's about, right?
Exactly, and that's why, you know, something came in between that, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And eventually, you know, Jay realized, okay, I'd rather do it on my own, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Didn't have to keep dealing with these guys on the day-to-day.
Yeah.
And that's where we all came to the conclusion that, okay, fuck it. I guess we got to do it on our own, then deal with them on the day-to-day. But we need something outside to help us as we try to do shit on our own because that shit ain't as easy as it looks and as it seems. You know what I mean? Just like you said, the Rolodex getting together and finding ways.
And as we do these things on our own and build these big brands, these TDEs and these quality controls and what Def Jam was when Russell and Rick Rubin ran it and what Motown was. And even when Barry Gordy left, he made that inclusion that, you know, the head of the chair still has to remain black. Those things need to be.
Yeah. Gerald Busby.
Mm-hmm. Gerald did that, right? So you know, you need those kind of inclusions written in these contracts. So it's there. It just has to be there. You know, when Russell left, you know, he left it and then we had to figure it out and then they put it together and LA and Jay came and did that. But, you know, for the next chairs, even after, it should still have been that, you know? And, you know, even Motown to this day, Ethiopia is doing it and that's how it should be, you know? And let's continue to run these labels that we started, even the ones they buy and purchase and even the ones they rebring in back, you know?
Yeah.
Give that back to you know, yeah, and the new ones, you know? So we got to think about all of that, man. And we got to actually, you know, join together in a way where we can actually communicate and get things done amongst each other and start seeing that. And then once you see it, then you know we can do it, man. And we can level the playing fields by just forcing our way, man.
Yeah.
To that point about Def Jam, because all of us have spent some time at Def Jam and it isn't what it used to be. What needs to happen for Def Jam to get back to where it once was?
Is it a thing still? I mean, I didn't know it was a thing.
Shit. I knew he was going to say that.
Is it a, you know what I mean? Is it just a logo? You know what I'm saying? Is it like...
It's not a thing.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, because a label is a culture. So a lot of these things ain't even labels no more because they don't have no culture no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, we know what it is when, you know, it trickles down. It starts at the top. You know what I'm saying? So if they don't got a person there at the top that's even empowering people or got a voice itself, you know what I mean? It's not really a thing. It's not a label. It's just
and,
like...
And the problem too with Def Jam, Eddie, is you can't count culture. Mm-hmm. So in a perfect world, establishment would love to stick somebody in there who they can monitor and who can... That's not how Def Jam was grown. That's not how it was birthed. And it takes somebody of the culture, from the culture, to be able to... if it's even worth it, to be able to develop it to this point, to make it what they want it to be without being bootstrapped or are kind of lumped into the everyday experience. You know what I would love to see? I would love to see a label like Def Jam being turned loose with a totally black staff, or even a Motown turned loose with a totally black staff, its own resources, its own P&L, its own different departments. And that chairman and that collection of people has to get out and compete bar for bar with their counterparts. I'd love to see that.
Yeah,
I'd love to see how the different outside entities attract to that company, and how deals get figured out to go to come and be a part of a company that's black run, even if it's a corporate black company. I would just love to see, because that's a win-win situation. Like,
but you signed Justin Bieber, so that kind of messed it up, man.
Huh? Oh, you know what? Hey, Hop, you make a good point, because I did Bieber and Jennifer Lopez, and it was cool when I was doing the nigga shit.
No, I know.
But the white man got uncomfortable when I started doing the white shit.
but that put it there, though. I think that's him being their biggest artist makes them afraid to go black and go hip-hop. You know
what I'm saying? This is an artist that was built. You know, he got discovered singing black songs. 100%. All we did was get him his own version of black songs. He was never supposed to be on Def Jam anyway. He was initially signed to Island.
Remember when I said that, Dion? I was like, yo, well, why don't we put him back on Island?
So yeah, he was initially on Island. So I don't know. I don't know where that went left.
Well, I wanted to tell a story. This is what I always say when posed with those questions. I go, if there was a great party on a block, right, and the DJ was there and the right people from the neighborhood was there and everybody go to the party, when I'm in LA, everybody be like, Shabba, man, that's the party or whatever, right? Corporations, capitalists, they go, it's a lot of traffic over there. Let's buy that block, right? And when they buy the block, they change the rules around, right? And then people start going, this party don't feel the same. Yep. And the DJ leaves, and they put another DJ that looked like that DJ in. And then some of the crowd leaves, and next thing you know, the party is over. Mm-hmm. And they still own the block. Mm-hmm. And then we go to another block and start another party. And then they find that block, mm-hmm. right? So when the question was asked, what do we need to do? The real question to me is, do we need to even be talking about being black executives instead of just talking about being entrepreneurs? Because they're going to find our block.
100%.
They're going to find it. Def Jam was indie. Atlantic was indie. Island was indie. Every brand that the majors used was indie. Mm-hmm. And the party kind of fizzles out when it's not.
Yep.
Because the rules, mm-hmm. the corporate rules.
I'm gonna go twofold with you on that, right? So D, you make a good point. Def Jam created the spark, right? But PolyGram came in with the gasoline to really enable that, to your point. But how many times do you gotta prove this shit, bro? Like, how many times do you gotta set a new block up?
Yeah.
Maybe it's how many times do we have to give it away?
True, good point. It's a good point.
Why do we run in that sense? We run in a circle because, you know,
we shouldn't have to. LA, we shouldn't have to run away to start our own in a business that is predominantly black music, and not have a job in the business that we actually I've been doing this for my whole life, man. You know, so it's like you want to go get a job. If you don't want to work, then you can't even be in the music business. You got to find your way in. Even at this moment, it doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense. If you have made me $100 million. I'm going to figure something out for you. I'm going to figure out you another opportunity to do that again. You're going to have to prove to me you can't do that again.
Yeah. And then it's just a silence, because the silence is the violence. You got emails flying, texts flying, and nobody responded. The silence is just as bad, bro. And let's talk about it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know you see my email. You responded to the other one, and I send you the other guy. You don't want to sign, and then you.
It's your shot. I'm a publisher, right? You know, I'm a publisher by trade. The silence is the violence. I'm going to put that one in my repertoire. But when I use it, your shit's going to go off. Your cash register is going to go off, because that is the most telling statement. Yo, bro, this email game, this behind the scenes game. And again, you don't really know it until you get to where we all have been. It's the most vicious shit ever, mm-hmm. ever.
Yeah. So, you know, the efforts is there. And then it's like you start questioning. Then you got to reach out right back within your circle. And then it's always the brother that's going to pull you up, right? And then you're like, all right, what the hell do I got to do to prove that I'm cool on every playing field and I'm not racist? So it's like I'm just trying to continue to be able to, you know, with all of us, we've fed at least 10 to 20 families. For me, I'm not just a leader here. I'm a leader in my community. So I'm helping my community as well. So when you reinvest and you say you want to reinvest in us, this is the people that are actually reinvesting in their communities. That's us. You know what I mean? So the Black Lives Matter starts right here, because we're actually the ones that matter, because we're not just executives that's just going home and not doing nothing else. There's so much other responsibilities I have for my community, my family, and other people that I want to hire and mentor so that they can eventually take my seat. So it's like, you know, it's a responsibility. When Russell and rest in peace, Andre Harrell had Uptown, they hired a good 50 to 75 Black people, yeah, over thousands through that whole time. And it was, and we all was a rubbed off by one of them. We all, yeah, was able to get an extension from that. Yeah. So it all trickles down, and how you feed these Black lives that matter come from these Black executives that matter. You know, there's guys that I looked up to before me that are no longer here, and I'm wondering why the hell they, what's up, man? Polk was one of the best executives. Some of the guys that I used to look up to that were not only executives, producers, just deliverers, people that I could turn around and give you an album in a month. You know what I mean? Like, they gone. They done gave up. They didn't do real estate. They doing other shit, still getting money, still finding ways. But at the same time, they had to lower their ego because they understood that the fight was bigger than what the conversation was, because the conversation wasn't really there then. So now it's here now. We're able to speak for them. So now we got to be able to say, yo, what happened? Like, you know, because some of these chairmen, it's like they too old to even be telling me what to do right now. You know what I mean? I mean, their ears is gone, but they still telling me what the fuck I'm doing out here in these streets. And it's like, you know,
it's ridiculous. It's
crazy, man. Yeah, and the older, you show me a Black guy that's in his 50s that work in the music business, and I'll show you he's not in the top ranking, bro.
Jay-Z, Kanye, Lil Wayne, Jonte Austin, Mary J. Blige, Dream, Brian Michael Cox, Mariah Carey, Usher, Common, 50, Bobby Shmurda. That's just a few of the artists and songwriters that you collectively have been a part of. Some of the biggest artists that we have, and songwriters and producers that we've seen in our business, which are over $1 billion, right? A lot of the Black executives now, and I'll just use myself as the point that I'm trying to make. You guys reached a certain part of your career in the music, in major labels, and got out. So as a very direct question, now that we're at where we're at, do I, and I'm saying myself as a representative of other Black executives and employees, without having your type of resumes, do we have a real shot of being in the rooms, having a seat at the table, being able to dictate change, or is it all a mirage?
It's a mirage.
I think we need it. I mean, I think that it definitely is definitely a form of a mirage.
He giving you the rah-rah speech right now. Hop know what it is. He know it's a mirage.
Go red. Drag red on him.
Keep your head in the game, Eddie.
But I think we need to be everywhere, though, you know what I'm saying? As far as, like, you know, I think we need Black executives all over the place. You know what I'm saying? Because there are some that do, you know what I mean, deal in that world good. You know what I'm saying? But if they, you know, because everybody can't just leave and create their own company, is basically what I'm saying.
That's,
you know,
right. Yeah, they should have to. They should have to.
There are artists that's still on that roster. Like, all these labels still got at least 25. I heard they have like 60 artists on the roster. You know what I mean? And how many is Black? So it's like, these rosters and these artists and these things of that nature to where, like me, like you said, all of us got a different type of E behind our name, aren't you, you know what I mean, with a P, you know what I mean? So it's like, that's, you know what I'm saying, the role that I feel most executives probably will end up going, you know what I mean, if they can't deal with it. And, you know, at a certain point, it's like, fuck it. But, you know what I mean, I definitely think that we need executives everywhere to make them pay and to really help us when we try to do other things as far as, like you said.
Well, let's try this. Let's divert it to the police department. Do we need to go in the police department to make the police better? Or do we need to defund the police, right? I'm not saying I had an answer. I'm saying that's the same question, but in something that's dead in our face, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what we have experienced is we tried to go into the police department. And between the people that don't want us in the police department, which is the industry, music executive industry, right, and the complicit us.
The conformed us.
Yes, the one that go where they could say, hey, man, deal with that for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir. Right? So mm-hmm. It's still that question, can we change it? First of all, we still got people on the take that look like us. Man, it's working against us.
It's rigged.
Right? So, again, is it defund the police or is it go in there and when you're on the beat, they looking at you ready to put a bullet in your head and say, I don't know what happened.
Eddie, my advice to you, honestly, would be to learn from your predecessors. And when you don't know, pick up the phone. Because it's not a lot that you're going to encounter and your peer groups are going to encounter that we haven't seen. And you need to look at this opportunity as a ways to a means. That would be my advice to you. Because nothing about what's happening is accidental. It hasn't been for the last 60 years. It's not going to be for the next 60 years. Mm-hmm. It's a capitalistic corporate infrastructure that would like to rely on its own as much as possible.
Yes. And that's not a crime, by the way.
It's not a crime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just recognize what it is and play accordingly.
Yeah. I have experienced programs that actually educate, you know, certain executives to grow. You know, Sony had a fast forward program. Even, you know, you go to your Harvard and get your business program. If it's about educational requirements, you know, those type of things matter on top levels, I understand. So there's brothers that can play on all those fields, you know? And if it's all about, okay, this guy is not there, that's why we can't give it to him, then you have to find that guy that is there that you can, you know? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I've seen L.A. Reid go to the Harvard Business Program when it was time to go to Arista. And mm-hmm. and if that's necessary, then so be it.
But I do want to share a story L.A. told me one time. He told me that when he was selling LaFace and he was ready to take over Arista, that Prince called him and said, you gonna do that? And he was like, yeah, man. He was like, call me after it happened. It's not gonna work. And he was like, nah, I'm telling you. And he's after he sold it, they got the axe and they phased him out. And he said, Prince called him back and said, how did that work out?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I just say again, you know, the weirdest part about it is all of us, we really wanted to excel to higher grounds. We already knew how to build and do what we knew how to do. It's really our ambition to do more for other people and to expand it and really give some representation.
Be change agents.
Yeah. But it's almost like we're putting our foot in a snake pit, acting like it's rabbits in there and getting our foot chewed off,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we got to go sit down and heal up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the next person put their foot in and it's a cycle and it's a cycle. So Eddie, I say, you just got to understand the cycle and learn, educate yourself and really seek counsel.
Always. I don't think that the generation before us was as forthcoming as we are with the council. I really don't. I think that
young executives as well. I think, you know what I mean? Just letting them know the real, you know what I mean? Because like, as soon as I left Atlantic, it was like, I hired Sycamore. I made sure I kept bringing people in that I know that, you know, that I believe in, you know what I mean? So I think, you know what I mean? That's why I said that as long as those labels are there, until we could deal with that way, as far as mm-hmm. like in a defunding the police sort of way, you know what I'm saying? Where it don't exist no more, but as long as it do exist, you know what I'm saying? We got to figure that out, you know what I'm saying? And we got to get dealt right as we there, you know what I mean? So I think somebody has to be there to make them pay, to hold them accountable, just, you know what I'm saying? To where, you know what I mean? Because I mean, I would love for it to be everything, you know, for us to be treated like Nashville and be like, yeah, everything go to Atlanta and we got our own shit, you know what I'm saying? And they don't even touch us. Like you said, that's what it should be. It should just be like, okay, cool, y'all deal with y'all shit. Here you go, here's the budget. Every label get their own little thing. And like you said.
Yeah, see how that work out.
Yeah, see how that
See what them out. Numbers look like.
Yep. Yeah. And I guarantee you, because most of the time when we do end up bringing something to a label, it usually slows us down. It's usually a whole big thing that slow down somebody that was already moving. You know what I'm saying?
Somebody got to have an opinion. Because like, a motherfucker who doesn't do shit got to have an opinion.
Dr. Dre stamp, that slow down ain't worth it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, unless you get a J or Dre or something like that, you need a smooth transition into what you already had going on, and they're not getting that. You got to go and, you know what I mean, start playing their game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about...
You all right over there?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm wonderful.
Good.
I'm reading what's going on in the chat and everybody what everybody got to say. One of the hot topics right now, and I think there's a little bit of division within the community about this particular word, urban. You know, there's been some statements about companies who are not going to use the word urban in their title. Going back to earlier in the conversation with Hop about when he was at Columbia, and we were at Columbia, and we just got rid of titles, period. There was the green team, the red team, and the blue team. There were no titles, period. But with the word urban and some labels saying that they're not going to use the word, I'd like to see get everyone's opinion on it, because I know that some of you had that word in your title during your tenures at while you were in buildings. B, and how does that affect things like radio with urban mainstream or urban adult contemporary and DSPs and things of that nature? So let's talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think urban really comes from everything being so radio driven. You know what I mean? Like radio, I think, coined the phrase first and made it to where it's hip hop, it's R&B, you know what I mean? After they switched it from black music, you know what I mean? It landed on urban. And the only problem I have with it, which I'm all for it, you know what I mean, as far as getting rid of the word, but what does that look like after the fact? And most of the highest jobs that we do get is the head of urban. That's the highest we could get, you know what I'm saying, is the head of urban, you know what I mean? So it's like, if that's not there, what does that mean? Does that mean everybody is just going to be A&Rs? And you know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't know who runs those artists and what happens, and you know what I mean? When you move that away. So I'm definitely ready for getting rid of the word, but I'm like, what do you replace it with? And what do you do with the
actual? Yeah, you gotta find a word that's less passive aggressive, you know?
And then if it ain't the word, if you're just blending everything in and calling what it is, hey, this is hip hop, this is R&B, because it ain't too many other offshots.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? It should be treated different in the first place. Like hip hop and R&B at this point, you know what I mean? It's only treated the same because everything was so radio focused. But now that it's not radio focused, hip hop and R&B have two different lifestyle approaches that's not on the same scale. You know what I'm saying? To where before it's like, oh yeah, like everything, like you said, most of the guys who went up to the top was radio guys because that's what they knew us for. And that's kind of how we really got, you know, ourselves in the game, was when they really started calling it urban. And then they was like, okay, now let's hire more of these people, more of us. You know what I'm saying?
But I want to
every label. It was only like one or two artists, and they was geared towards black, like a Michael Jackson, Earth, Wind & Fire. So they don't need an urban department, because they all was black artists who was geared towards white audiences. So right. And the indie labels kind of did the urban thing for them. You know what I mean? Yeah. Snacks did the urban thing for them. You know, they hired the labels to do it. Like, you know, like Arista let L.A. Reid, let LaFace do the urban thing. So Arista didn't have to do the urban thing. Bad Boy did the urban thing. You know what I'm saying? So they didn't need an urban department at Arista Records because they had labels who had real strong heads, creative guys doing that for them. So they're going to go back and start giving the money to labels and turn those labels into the urban divisions and kind of get back to what Chris is talking about and funding that, then I'm more for it. But then if it's just getting rid of the word, just like giving us 100, just putting 100,000 up, it's put in the same, you know, the same.
I wanted to jump on this one because I think personally, if we're talking about that, let's talk about getting rid of the word pop too. Because I don't know what that is. As much black music as we call crossover pop, because the trick of it all is the urban radio market is small. I don't know how that happened, but that's happened. And the pop market is big, right? Now you got so many black urban artists on pop radio, but they urban artists, right? And then you got the other elephant in the room nobody wants to talk about when you go to your department and you say, I got a record, it's pop. Well, black people don't go straight to pop. Black people got to go through urban and rhythmic first, right? You got to go through that to get to the, we don't just let you in to the biggest market, right? Jason DeRulo. Unless you what?
Jason DeRulo.
I'm not sure. I gotta investigate that one.
Right. But
what I'm saying is, in the 70s, if we do our research, not going all in that, somebody came up with this, right? And back then, I believe the intention was to give a platform to black artists that were shut out. Right. Mm-hmm. We're not shut out today. We are thriving musically, right? We are the draw, right? But yet, we still got this thing called pop and urban. You know, if we look at it, we got country and blues. If we look at it, we got, you know, there's always been these reasons these genres came into play. Some of them were cultural, some of them were business. And I think whether we got the word or not, I think there's still a system in place that prejudges what we do and what we stand for as executives, creative, Harvard Report. There you go. So you know what I'm saying.
You know, the Harvard Report, when Clive Davis decided to let the people at Harvard do a research on black music, and they told them how to deal with black music, how to deal with, and they called it soul music at the time. Because before hip hop, you know, it wasn't no need for urban. You could just say R&B and that covers everything. You know what I'm saying? And they basically made it to where it's like, hey, you get your black labels, you know, cause they wanted to deal with us more through the labels because then we could be the third party and deal with everything on our own. But it was certain artists as it started to grow even more on radio.
Until it got popular, right.
Exactly, we had black radio. Black radio became more popular. So we was able to sell numbers without crossing over. So if we selling numbers without going to pop, then what's that? That's, I guess, urban, you know what I'm saying, or whatever you want to, you know what I mean, at that point. But like you said, it's basically a report that Columbia had made, and that's why Clive Davis knew what to do when he got the Arista. You know what I'm saying? When he got the Arista, he was like, okay, cool, I'm going to get Bad Boy in the face. When he was at Columbia, he got Stax and Philadelphia International, which was the same thing at the time. You know what I'm saying? So he
checked a lot of boxes doing it that way, too.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And that's how they deal with us moving on. That's why when it all boils down to it, they do go back to who's the artist, because they want to deal with us that way. Like, they want us to have as much accountability as possible and run out the money and deal with it on our own. And next thing you know, that's why most of these labels have short shelf lives, because they're not built to deal with $100 million budgets and things of that nature. Like, these dudes was just in the street 2-3 years ago. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Trying to get money for the studio. You know what I'm saying? And next thing you know, they're giving them $100 million deal and things of that nature. And, you know, and that was Rough Riders. Now it was Rockefeller. Now it was this. But they're not really helping them really, really grow their business. Because for them to grow their business is not in the best interest of
them.
It's high dollar acquisition, Eddie. And it is what Hop is describing. you know, I can sign the artist directly, or there could be a middleman who deals with the, I got to pay, I get a little less of a margin for a little while he does all the grooming and the developing and the curating. And then when it gets to a certain point, then I can flush it. I can move the middleman out of the way and have the artist directly.
Yeah, I got the catalog. I got all the good records already. You know what I'm saying? So catch them for a couple old records, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You give them a couple money, put it out. You know what I'm saying? It's like that end of their career at that point. You know what I'm saying? But they got the meat and potatoes, and they got, you know, DMX records they wanted and the 50 Cent records they wanted. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they know when they got to get it. You know what I'm saying? So I think that part is like what's going to happen. Like, I guess we got to step up and really create those things for them to invest in. I think that's, you know what I'm saying? That's like our next step is like, we have to really, you know, create those companies. Like, I started my label Seneca Village 2 years ago, and, you know, and a lot of it been tough dealing with the majors going that route. You know what I mean? Cause now we got a million digital distribution companies, and we got, you know, a few things like Empire, which is doing good things. And you got a couple other, we got the majors. So we have like a bunch of options, but now we have to figure out how do we maneuver in that world? Because we all used to different ways of doing things, and we all got different music tastes and different business, you know what I mean, practices, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? But I think that's where we start to, you know, have to come together, you know what I mean, and hold them accountable and use what they mm-hmm. got coming to us. We need to use that so we could build something, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing I was going to say is we keep playing the game that the person who made the board laid for us, right? I've been talking about this a lot lately, which is music and arts might be the one thing, I don't know, if you can help me find another, help me please, where you can create something. And by law, you own it. The minute it's created. The
moment it's created. Song,
you're the owner by law. Mm-hmm. The only thing that separates you from ownership is that contract. That's what brings into points and recoup and royalties and reversions and right again, we keep step putting our foot in that one, right? And there's no other business where if I built a house, I would own it. If I wanted to get a mortgage on it, when I pay the mortgage off, it's mine.
Own it. Yep.
Dude, this is the only business where they make an evaluation of us based on this urban thing, right, that we're talking about, give us some money if they see us in a jam, and then own what we built.
And own the next thing you built, too.
Yeah, no, anything we build during the time. Anything we think, they own it. Where else does this exist?
I'm getting calls from people that want to buy catalogs and your royalties, and I'm insulted by it. Like, this is stuff that you're passing down to your kids. Not everybody, but they're attacking they're attacking us for it. They go on calling me and asking me if you know any other producers that I'm like, nah, bro, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about too.
Didn't you see Marvin Gaye's kids just make $5 million off of Pharrell? Like, you fucking crazy? That's for my kids. Like, mm-hmm. why are we selling that for? So, you know, if they put you in that position where you force or you feel like you need the money so much that you sell it, or you're not as smart and you just sell it and you think that the money is, but you're playing yourself, you know? So we also got to educate each other, all for the brothers that should know by now that you shouldn't be doing that. And I'm mm-hmm. seeing artists do it now. You know, they selling their shit. And mm-hmm. and it's a foolish thing to do. And half of them that's been in this game 25 years, they're getting their copyrights back if they had the right contract. Some of them already sold that, you know? So you got all these vultures coming at you, calling you, and then they acting like they're doing you a favor. I could pay you 10 years in advance of your royalties. Nah, bro, I'm good. But that's what they're doing. There's companies right now that's doing it. And they're getting real money to do it, you know?
I remember one of the first conversations that I had when I first got to the company that I'm at now is with an artist who was very popular back in the late 90s, early 2000s, had some hit records. And he came in and the first thing he said to me was, yo, I'm 45 years old. I'm not making any more money because the labels have all my, they own all my rights to my music, and I can't feed my family. I can't take care of my kids. And one of the things that I've seen coming up specifically in the conversations that have been going on for the last few days, and most recently through Ron Sweeney's open letter, was musical reparations. What do you guys think about that? And do you think that any of these labels will actually do something like that?
I think they will. I think it got to be presented, you know what I mean, the right way. But I think that it's definitely a good case for it, for sure. You know what I mean? As far as, you know, like you said, with a lot of the bad deals. And then
The cold chilling artists, man. They didn't get their money. They didn't get their royalty statements. You know what I mean? A lot of them out there that still ain't even know what they made.
And also some pioneers who just was a little too early. You know what I'm saying? Before certain things happened, before the industry really shift into that. You know what I'm saying? But they still get their stuff sampled. And now whoever else could make a lot of money off of it. But the fact that their deals wasn't right, you know what I mean? They're, you know, in a bad place. You know what I mean? Like, once that happened. Because a lot of times people started going back to those artists and using them. You know what I mean? Like, instead of sampling them, like, you know, putting them on the record.
They should be something like a comptroller for the music business, because there's a lot of floating checks that can't get found, you know? And in New York, if you got checks from life insurance or bank that you close, you just go on a New York comptroller, you'll find it right there. And you can go get your money. But the industry, they'll keep that shit.
The music industry isn't unionized either. Like, If you compare it to the film and TV business,
oh yeah, like after and all that, yeah,
it's not even like collect. You know, realistically, me and you could work at a company, or we could be one of these capitalists that runs one of these companies, and somebody come in with a hot song, and to get that song on, we could literally take a piece of that song in exchange for the gate that we're going to open up. Right? There's no regulation in the music industry. Whereas in the content business, there is staunch regulation. I can't see that ever happening in the music business, but to me, that seems like the only way to find the reparations that Hop spoke of or that you asked about, and to be able to find, to take some sort of corrective measure moving forward. Without it, without any overall governing body, where you know, these companies have the free will to do and structure contracts and manipulate and finagle with legal aid and legal assistance the way they want to, that's not going to get corrected. And I don't want to sound like
Debbie. Well, they could take technology to correct it, just like what the industry did to the cab industry, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's something that can happen that can change that.
We spoke to that earlier.
You know? It's a big black box of money out there.
I wanted to toss a thing in, no, because the real catch of the story is we're dead in the middle of our music being, you know, top shelf, right? I understand the difficulty when you pass your time and you're not gonna make anything else, right? But technology opened up the door. Let's say, for instance, publishing is just 9.2 cent of a dollar, right? We've been blocked out of the 91 cent so long that we hold on to the 9 cent like our very life
depends. Yeah.
Right? But this is the first time where we can go, I want the 91 cent, right? And another way to look at it sometimes, Shy, is if I can get more 91 cents by cashing in some 9 cents, then I'm exchanging assets, mm-hmm. right? And I think, again, all of this is by design to paralyze us, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Because I think that ultimately we are at that point where we can create anything and make 10 times more than we ever made off what we do. If we position ourselves properly. There needs to be more minorities building digital marketing companies. There needs to be more minorities building all the businesses that surround what we do as creatives, mm-hmm. right? Because again, I go, what exactly happens when we make a song? Right. You know, we don't, do we really want to talk about streaming farms and paid playlists and paid radio and how much of this is really real and not real in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, how much of it is manipulated and really pull a sheet off? Or do we want to be strategic and walk away not with just our publishing, but with some masters mm-hmm. and really understand what that means in the digital age going forward, content ID and different ways to get paid that's not transactional. We're not even selling music no more. A lot of people's contracts are based on selling, right? We just...
The 800-pound gorilla, D, is music actually sells everything except for itself, and none of the contracts put forth have a lot of provisions for that.
Yes.
Especially the old artists. They didn't have streaming in their contracts.
Yeah. Among other things.
You know?
So that publishing in the streaming world is worth less than it ever been. It's 0.0000 something per play, right? And that's where I go, hey, it's a lot of information that we gotta kind of build up our assets to create more opportunity. There's companies out there that there's a streaming company that looked at, I had one song going through the streaming company and the CEO looked at that account and said, just based on the streaming revenue of this, I mean, the income revenue of this one song, I could advance you this many hundreds of thousand dollars to do what you want to do. And you just pay it back with a portion of your income, right? And you stay the owner. And it just blew my mind that, wait a minute, it's options and we're not leveraging the assets that we did secure against the whole fight of the machine, you know, properly. And I think that ultimately what I'm just saying that...
We got to challenge ourselves to think different. No question.
Yeah, I hate when I see people lay a trap and we fall for it. I hate when I can see, like, you know, I love the protests, and then part of me goes, man, it's still a pandemic. Mm-hmm. You mm-hmm. know, we can't be pushed into things the way people want us to be pushed into them. We don't want to react, we want to act, right? And then that's where I say, even if you, whatever, if anybody wants to own it, not own it, whatever, but what is our real plan to really take control of that 91 cent that we just have checked off as we never gonna have it, or yeah. it's reparations to get it back. Yeah. When by law, it was ours. Yeah. It was ours in the first place.
From the beginning,
we just got tricked into signing something.
Mm-hmm. And there was a model built. Like now there's no, we don't have to follow a model. Part of it is like you said, it's a lot of it is education. A lot of it is understanding that you have different options. Like they pre-baked a model for, and then a lot of us were just happy to be in the music business without really fully understanding that there is a business component to that music business.
And that's and that's it right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're part of our own problem. If I'm an A&R, which I am an A&R, mm-hmm. right? And I'm signing an artist. I'm specifically a black artist because I'm probably an A&R in urban A&R. I'm signing an artist that is black, and we're signing them to a bad deal. So I'm part of the problem, but I need a check. That's the conflict. So what do I do?
Ooh. I mean, you don't do that.
Check
you
on
do
that.
What I did, man.
What you're gonna do is get your salary. So it ain't like they really, you know, breaking you off from the deal. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
You still gotta be Eddie at the end of the day.
Yeah, so it's best to do what's right. I mean, I deal with the people, man. I deal with the artists who I gotta see. You know what I mean? So I try to make it right, make it make sense for them.
You gotta always do what's right, man. You have to. It's your career in the balance. And the power will ultimately come just from, you can see from the panel you have here, the power will come from the relationships that you established by the people you did right by. Not only just suggesting that, I do understand that it's a business, but nobody wins in the fuckery, nobody.
Yeah, and bad deals come to light, you know what I mean? And then you look even worse in the long run, you know what I mean, when that happens.
Your reputation is a pillar. You don't want to diminish that, you know?
You don't want to be Steven Jackson at Candyland.
No.
You don't want to do that face.
You know?
When he ride up on the horse, you don't want to be upset. Mm-mm. That's the key. Don't sell your soul, man. I'm gonna be the first one to tell you. I didn't always feel comfortable about the positions I've been in over the last amount of years. It's uncomfortable. How do you deal with it? I agree. That's a difficult thing. And of course you want to, when your success and you feeding your family is leveraged over you, you really just got to find a way to, another road if it's going to be that way.
But I'm gonna be honest with you, Eddie. I working at Warner Chapel, I had great success working at Warner Chapel. I would never do deals that would compromise artists or compromise the people who delivered those deals on behalf of the company. It's just, I believe in karma like I believe in God, not to get all philosophical on y'all, but you still got to be you when you move on. And you will move on.
Yep.
You will move on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to bring somebody in, one of our friends. He has a question.
Who is that? Who you got?
Young Tab.
Oh, to be so.
Tab,
we're not gonna talk about your handicap on this. I'm not giving any instruction, any golf instructions.
Tab, turn your video on, Tab.
Yeah, you gotta get your technology game on.
Yeah, he gonna say you got something to say, and then
he can't hit the button.
His mic is off,
and his video is off.
Yeah, his video. Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Breakthrough. We almost had you.
No, there you go.
Yeah. Okay. There he is. One down.
Turn the mic off now.
That's why he can't go through. He at the Soho House.
Oh, look at this guy. What is this guy doing?
I don't know.
Hold on.
Turn the mic on.
There you go. Do that.
There he is.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
I can't hear y'all, but I'm going to ask a quick question. So really quick, I just want to ask, so how important do you feel it is for an A&R to have an outside mentality to get inside of the building? To be inside of a building. Like, I think a lot of us who've been on the outside and haven't been on the inside, how important do you think it is now that we've been entrepreneurs outside of a building to actually go back in there and to be inside of a building with an outside mentality, you know what I'm saying? Like an entrepreneur's mentality.
I mean, I think it's definitely pressing. I think you gotta have that because like, even as an A&R, you know, you gotta work the building, you know what I mean? So, you already got to maneuver through the building and work these different departments and things of that nature. So I think when you kind of there, at one time, I used to just hand the record over. You know what I mean? When I kind of came up as an A&R, you know what I mean? It was like, oh, I'm finished. Let me go to the next record. But I think once you outside the building, you realize you got to do everything or you got to be involved with everything. I think it's a good thing to take back into the building as an A&R, you know what I mean? Because it just really helps you, you know what I mean, get your project out. Because sometimes you can have a good album, and if you ain't really working the right people and doing those things right in the building, then it's going to be hard.
And nobody can bullshit you. Like, once you take those external skill sets inside, you know the bullshit, you know what's real, you know the processes, you know how people are capable, what the delivery expectations and how to meet them. It kind of gives you a leg up. If that's the road that you want to take, no question.
Yeah, and you
I would always embrace my entrepreneurial spirit. no matter what I was.
You can't be on the grid. You got to be off it. So when I'm in the hood with the conversations while we chilling, listening to music, and we talking about artists, those are the conversation that ends up in the boardroom. You know, because those are the energies that give you that validation of, yo, this is right, or this is the right thing to do. It's not really the ones in the ballroom that actually give it. They'll like it, but you kind of getting it out here, out in the field, in the streets. So it's really important that you kind of be out there and not always in the grid or just to be in the industry.
And you got to have a necessary confidence to walk in that building in the first place.
Some
of us. I'm a slave to the first and the 15th and forget what it's like to be outside and then bring that, you know, that mentality on the inside. So I just wanted to just kind of get y'all take on that.
They working so many hours. They ain't even outside really dealing with the real culture, dealing with the real people that's out here really telling you what's going on or feeling that real wave that's in the events or wherever you at. You got to be outside.
With what you're saying, Shy, I think one fact is that when we have that connection and we have this polished skill set and experience of being not just being a street guy in the boardroom, but really being an articulate, intelligent, equally educated counterpart, right? Mm-hmm. It intimidates.
It's the scariest shit to this type of shit.
It does intimidate, because I remember one time when I was seeing certain EVPs and they were going over budgets and like, yo, you got $50 million to play with this year to do this. And I'm like, all right, so when I get to this EVP title, that means you're going to tell me how much money I got to deal with to get to play with this year? I got there and I ain't even here. No, I wasn't a part of none of those meetings. None of those number meetings. I couldn't even know what the whole yearly budget was for A&R, bro. But here we are, EVP, but the last person I saw was the one that knew the numbers. Why the fuck I don't know the numbers? You know what I mean? So it's just that kind of thing that happens, that when you get there.
I'm not going to ask you who you were working for.
Yo, I had to level up, but I said, yo, if that's what the E actually stand for, now I get to know the budgets. Yo, give me that EVP title next, man. I need that. I get there now. I'm not even in the meetings. I've been seeing the whole group walk in that room. Why, what's up? Nah, we don't need you in there. We just need you on the creative, man. Nah, man. They put you up. They limit you. So that's a part of what you're saying, Dion. Like, cause I'm smart, man. I went to NYU. I'm not just a street dude, bro. I got some intelligence here. So we can add it up. We can figure it out. We can know that certain catalogs need to just keep coming. You know, I watched Ghostface save Def Jam so many years when they didn't have nothing to be delivered. And I understood what that meant to the company, you know, certain people. And it's like, all right, but you're not teaching us that. You know, I'm watching it happen, but no one's telling you that this is what needs to happen as well. Catalog, shit that's keeping it coming, keeping the lights going, you know?
Yeah. Or just the sheer numbers game of the facade of numbers and how people make their bonuses based on subsequent releases that they have programmed in for numbers that they know that they're never going to. You needed that information. You needed to know that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Somebody had an obligation to share this shit. I'm not poking fun.
I'm going to tell you, because I'm going to just say, if you want to think that's frustrating, wait about till when you see the numbers and then the CFO go, but you can't control it. And then, you know, it's what I'm saying. Oh, what a tangle web we weave when we deceived.
Yeah.
And then even thinking it was possible. And then somebody looking, going, okay, move it over there. If you come over there, move it over there. If you get over there, damn, he's good. Just take it off the table. Matter of fact, move him on out. Doing a little too much, man.
Hey, when your shit is driving the whole company's bottom line, and that hide and seek game, you know what it is, but you know your money that you're helping to generate is going to this artist or to that artist. Or to some of the facade, some of the numbers game.
Right. Well, they don't want you to get the credit because, you know, you could use it in, you know, renegotiation if they know you meant, you know what I mean? If you knew you meant that much, if you knew that what you was doing was moving the needle that much, you know what I mean? So that's why they keep a lot of that information. Hey, Hosh,
that's a great point, because when I was renegotiating something and I mentioned the bottom line numbers that we had met, the person that we were, people that we were negotiating with asked me how I knew that.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. Because even like when you look at black CFOs and admin and lawyers, it's they still going to be admin and CFOs and lawyers. You know what I'm saying? So it's like they still, you know what I'm saying, they're not going to be able to do things as a black person in that position. You know what I'm saying? It's just like that position is even more by the books. You know what I'm saying? It's like they there or because print. They count, and they there because they good and legal and things of that nature. So it's like having that don't really help us. Like we damn near got to fight with those people, and they be our brothers. You know what I'm saying? Like the admin or the legal and those departments is like they're not on the same page that we on because those are the ones who've been there for 30 years when you think about it.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? If you want to find a black person that's been there more than that's 50 and that's 30, been there for that long, they're probably in those areas. They're in legal, they're in admin, somewhere where, you know, there's no creative responsibilities. You just sit there and you just do your job. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like that don't really connect with us as like black creative executives. Like that don't really help. You know what I'm saying? If we have more of those people in that position, it got to be up top. You know what I'm saying? It got to start at the top. And like when we was there at Def Jam, it was like, I used to feel like I was a black face literally. You know what I'm saying? We had a white person running Def Jam, and we don't have an urban department because we're an urban label. So there's no need to say urban. So me and Dion near the head of A&Rs, but can't really do much. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know what I'm saying, our boss, you know what I'm saying, at the time was a white person, but we still had to show up at all these events because he can't represent Def Jam in that way. We got to represent
that's Def Jam. That's insulting. Yeah. Insulting. You know it really is.
The way I'm like, I'm it flying really around judge talent shows and shit. I'm like, what the fuck I'm here doing? I want to know what the numbers is so we could, you know, really shift it and change something. But it was more like a lot of times when we are there, if we're not there in those other positions, that's like anybody could get that job as far as illegal. You know what I mean? If you qualify. But in our A&R, it's not a qualified thing with A&R. It's not you don't go to school for it. You know what I mean? They just have
to steal. Educational requirement.
Yeah, more than want you to be there or they don't want you to be there. So most of the jobs I got was people who really fucked with me and wanted me to be there. You know what I'm saying? Other jobs I could have got, but it wasn't the case. Like literally Rick Rubin fucked with me, Dion fucked with me. You know what I'm saying? Like those are the people that hired me and other than me being at Def Jam. So I don't look at me being at a label. I don't feel right at those labels because it's more, I never did nothing great there. I feel everything I did great was when I walked out and said, I love Kanye, I'm gonna believe in him. Little Wayne, let me go help him. Let me, you know what I'm saying? And then I seen what I know from being at the labels and I used that as a manager to maneuver my artists throughout the label. And that's when I had the best advantage. You know what I'm saying? When I was at a label, it was a disadvantage. People look at you different. They're like, you know what I'm saying? It's just everything changed. It's like, you're a different person now. It's like, motherfucker, who fuck with you a week ago?
You one of them.
I used to be like, yo, it's me. Yeah. For real, it's me. Like why are you talking to me like this?
One time, 2 Chainz called me a plain clothes cop. I think I might have left the next day. So, you know what I mean? So we, but that's what it is because at times I got him doing things that I didn't even believe in. And that's when I realized I can't be there no more. I got somebody doing something that I don't even want him to do. So
it's got
to
be you at the end of the day.
Yeah, I'm going to get out of here. Somebody else got to do that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because somebody don't know what he should be doing. Got to tell him what to do. Because I know in no way I'm going to, you know, lead my brother down that road. You know what I mean?
And you know better.
Mm-hmm. I want to do 2 more questions before we get out of here. The next one, and I don't know where he went, but Mark Byers, he asked, do you feel this generation understands the walk you guys had to endure for them to be in the game?
Question.
This generation has a short attention span, so I don't think so. I mean, I'm from the era where we read the credits and knew who the executives was before we was able to Google them. We just knew who they were. So I'm not sure. I really can't answer that, but maybe one of y'all can.
I mean, I think technology took such a big jump in that way of being an A&R. I think that was the biggest jump to me as being an A&R, is just the technology, how much it used to be to, you know, to pay for a studio, 2-inch tapes, and just the whole process of you record a song and you can't even hear that song until you go back into the studio. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like people wasn't leaving with tapes and things of that nature. So to me, I think that part of it of just having access to everything is, you know, I don't think they will ever really understand that, which I don't expect them to. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure it was harder for people before us, you know what I mean, as we constantly, you know, move through generations and stuff. But I think technology is the biggest thing to me that has
level. I would agree.
I don't think so, man.
Yeah, I don't think the respect factor is really there just from the standpoint that, again, the veil has been pulled back. There was a certain mystique about the business when we all got into it. And so I wanted to know about all of these gentlemen on the panel and many others like them because I wanted to be great. And they were great, or they were on the road to greatness. And so you kind of want to know what other people are doing. And you want to educate yourself about what it is procedurally. You know, Michael Jackson used to put out an album every 5 years. Now records come out like every 5 weeks from the same artist. It's just the turnover is too great. And the appreciation for the music isn't there just because it's so transactional. And that there is no going back there. I mean, that's going to be what it is. But I will say is that the records that do take the time to get made with some degree of development, I think, you know, Dion got an artist right now that's on fire, but the records are a reflection of his skill set. And that's why the shit is working. And that's why the shit is going to have some staying power. That's something that can be learned from this generation of record makers, as opposed to the record that got made on a flight from, you know, Atlanta to New York.
I wanted to say, man, something was really bothering me when that question popped up, because I really in my heart believe a lot of the younger kids don't even respect our path, right? And our journey. And then when I look at it, I go, yeah, because they like, man, the hell with all that.
Yeah,
I'm gonna run these streams up. I don't care about none of that. I don't care about no building, no job. They don't care, right? Mm-hmm. And we care. And that could sometimes be the thing that slow us down, is that we still care about the buildings. For what? It's not stopping the kids. And they're getting 10 times what the people we fought with for to get. Mm-hmm. And the people before us got 10 times less than what we fought to get.
That's right.
It's just been a digital revolution. And I'm not sure that we've got access to the information that allows us to see that the kids are like, hey, man, whatever. I'm on this SoundCloud. I'm on this YouTube. I'm moving. And then next thing you know, Billboard changes their rules to count YouTube. Like, you know, we've been still trying to sell records and make quality. They like, man, I'm going to make noise. I'm going to make TikTok. I'm going to make controversy. I'm going to make, you know, not that that's never been done, but to not care about your music and do it. It's just a different time.
They're not dealing with any gatekeepers either, D. You know what I mean? And I think that we, you know, that's a mindset that we came up in that we actually have to just flat out break as older executives. But they never dealt with gatekeepers. And so they're not conditioned. For you to get a record on to radio, for you to get a record on the chart, somebody had to bless that record. Somebody had to say, this is okay. We're going to move forward with this. And so I actually applaud the generation that is, you know, respects it, takes it on the chin and says, you know, there's no gate here. And so until somebody stops me, I'm going to keep going. And, you know, it's probably something that all of us should embrace even faster. But you still got to understand the people who went through the struggle before you so you can be better at what you're doing.
I think there is a level of respect because, you know, you think about producers who model themselves after, you know, what Dion, what you've done. You have management companies and production companies who have modeled, you know, just their name off of hip hop since 1978. You have people who want to build their publishing business similar to how Chris built his Noontime. You have people who want to have artists and broker big deals and run, you know, their own successful labels like G-Unit and broker big deals like Vitamin Water, right? So I think there is that level out there, just to give a different perspective.
But I would challenge and ask, how many are under 25? Mm-hmm. How many are under 20?
you know, because think about it. When we grew up, Biggie and Nas was teenagers. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, some of our Tupac, they wasn't like 30.
Yeah, you're right.
They were serious about their craft and got into being serious about their business earlier than this generation. I think that we didn't pass down the care of the arts and craft to them for whatever reason. That part didn't always translate, but their business acclimate may be more aggressive than ours was.
I mean, I think that goes back to the gatekeeper thing, because the gatekeeper is where you could really control things. You know what I'm saying? Or even on a good way, you know what I mean? As far as passing down stuff, to where if they could just skip over us and go right to where they got to go, you know what I'm saying? It's going to be hard to really articulate anything in that sense. Because like what Chris did, when I did Hip Hop Sense, I was modeling Afternoon Time as far as building a team of producers and finding my way. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't even thinking of an artist. I was thinking like, damn, he got all these producers and stuff like that running around all them noontime shirts and motherfucking Miami. And, you know what I mean? So it was like a different way to where we had to back our way in. Because by that time, you had to fuck with us because we had producers. You know what I mean? To where that made me a better A&R. You know what I mean? Like, Shaw Money. I was managing Shaw Money at the time. You know what I'm saying? Like when I first started and shit. So it was like, I'm gonna go that way so I know I can make it sound how I want to sound. You know what I'm saying? By working with people and having, you know, some type of leverage, and that, you know, that helps, because that's where you could go. That's where I think what Tab was saying about, you know, having an entrepreneurial spirit. You know what I mean? Because I didn't have that. I started at a label that was an entrepreneurial label, but me as an executive, I was just playing a role. But once I started seeing how he built his company, how Puffy had Hitman, and I was like, okay, I want to do that. And that's how I ended up getting Ye. He was a producer. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like I wasn't trying to get no artist. The artist and the producer ended up being an artist. So it's like, it's, you know, learning from that. And I've seen people who said the same thing to me, like, oh, I want to do producers. I want to manage this. And, you know, and all of that, because people wasn't doing that. Everybody go the same route to where that's what I'm kind of make the point of. It's different things for people to do. You know what I'm saying? It's different roles. So if I was just trying to be the executive role and not build my production company, I would have been gone a long, long, long time ago. You know what I'm saying? Because that's, you know, they got to fuck with
some other skill sets.
You got to make it to where they got to fuck with you. Put it like that. You got to be good, so good they can't annoy you.
Matter of fact, Eddie, I got a better question. If you was 18, would you want to work at a company? Or what would you really aspire to do if you was 18?
Now or when I was 18?
Didn't know and didn't experience and didn't see. You know, you just watch the TV or not even TV, YouTube, the phone, whatever, right? And you got a 6ix9ine running around doing that, and you got all these elements that we see today. Again, sometimes we know so much that, you know, that's why I've been saying, like, do we ever need a job again? Or is this generation not about a job at all, you know?
That's what we've been conditioned to do. When I first got in the music business and you were there and Hop was there, I was 24 and I started working for the hottest, you know, one of the hottest labels at that time, Good Music. And I was just happy to fucking be there. I was walking around with a white, you know, white t-shirt with gold foil that said Good Music. I was just happy to be at the party. Didn't realize that there was a VIP section where people had free bottles. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you ask me now, if I don't have the knowledge of what's going on in the business, if I don't have these conversations, I don't know. I'm just happy to be at the fucking party. Yeah, I waited in line for an hour. Yeah, I paid $50 to get in. But lo and behold, I didn't know there was a VIP section where people was getting free bottles and getting all the girls.
I get it. But that's Good Music. That's an indie company.
But at that particular time, it was funded by a major label.
There we go. That's all I'm saying. You didn't go work for Columbia first.
No, I didn't.
What's your first step? You went where it was cool.
That mothership, right?
Right.
All right, before we get out, I want to bring one more person in that has a question.
I was going to see if you was going to try and limit our time. I was going to treat you like that black senator treated them people. Our time short.
Oh, man. Rory.
Yo.
Joe Budden Podcast. What up, Rory?
What's going on, my bro? But what's going on, everybody? Some familiar faces.
That's right. What's up, Rory?
What's going on? This has been a great panel, by the way. I really, really enjoyed it. I did want to ask how you guys think the role of an A&R has changed since 2010 being the blog era to 2020 being the streaming era.
It's a research game. It's just like now it's a computer A&R doing research, looking at numbers to find what was jumping out instead of going off the gut feeling of finding that talent.
You think it's been compromised because of that?
Yeah. Certain real talents get overlooked that way.
I think you have to be creative about how you launch your talent nowadays too, as opposed to before. There was a set system on how you do things and how you roll things out, where now there are no rules. There's absolutely no rules to how you build a level of acclaim and a level of popularity to be able to launch a record. And I think you have to look at everything when doing that.
Yeah, I think it's harder to go with your gut nowadays, because even if you bring something in, it's kind of like, what is that? It's so easy for something to have proof nowadays. So if you bring something in without proof that you really just love and feel like it need some developing, it's like, you know, that's, they'd rather just go with the numbers, you know what I mean? Because it's just easy to call with them. Because that's what they want to do anyway. You know what I'm saying? Is just use numbers. They can just use analytics and be like, hey.
And I wanted to add too, technology, man. Like A&R used to be about putting the artists in the studio, getting the record, finding the music. Man, you got a lot of artists, they in their room.
Mm-hmm.
How do you A&R artists just sending you what they make? Or, you know, and you just, now you kind of just, again, oh yeah, that one's good, that's bad. But I think the whole thing has changed. Like, it's changing. But again, we in a business where we don't even sell music. It's just, you know, I was studying a theory that the advertising becomes the product, and how we make music, and then the goal is to get Billboard, a magazine, to say we're number one. Like, that's the goal, right? Whatever you say, do. Okay, streams. Okay, what? Download what? Oh, free streams worth this? Paid worth? Oh, what do I need to do to get you to make an ad that says I'm number one? And then that's my value, mm-hmm. or to get an award to say I'm number one. But meanwhile, we haven't sold the song, right? We're just playing it for people, and people just listening. And some people subscribe to hear songs. And I have no clue how to tell you how that trickles down to anybody, you know? But so if we're not even doing the same business anymore, of course the roles. Technology is taking that away from us.
Yeah.
In that sense, we have no full ability to A&R an artist that doesn't want to be A&R.
Yeah. Right. And the A&Rs used to be able to reach out to the community, not just the people that the artist was working with. So Such Like Hip Hop was able to get me on projects, and he pulled me in from out the blue as a new producer. Now I'm on Beanie Siegel. Those opportunities are limited. The guys ain't really extending the trees no more. So it's like the industry is getting smaller and smaller while there's more talent out there that can't even get in touch with the A&Rs or can't get to them. So it's the game has changed in so many ways where the talent is trying to get their in. They can't get in. And it's a suffering for real talented producers and new artists, you know? It's like they have to actually get paid with their own money. They got to make it to make it, you know? And if they don't make it, you paying them with their own money once they made it. So it's like, come on, like let's be for real. Who's taking the chances now? There's nobody taking a chance.
Like they just betting on black and red on roulette.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They bet on theories, Big Bang theories, and you know, that's all they betting on, numbers and people that's already going.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I call them stock traders. They're not building companies and IPOs. They're trading stock. They watch how it moves.
Absolutely.
Buy in.
Mm-hmm. So it's changed drastically, man.
I love so high.
All right. I lied. One more, and then we're done. I lied. Ray.
Uh-oh.
My brothers.
What's happening?
What's up, Ray? Man.
What up? What up? What up, man? I'm listening to y'all, and this honestly, this shit is like watching the playoffs for me. I'm watching all my OG legends talk shit, and it's like pissing me. Nah, seriously, it's like I don't really have a question. It kind of bothers me because it's like, my nigga, we need y'all, right? Me being at a label right now, I know how bad we need y'all, and I heard a lot of stuff you said about the youngest not respecting us and all the other stuff. But the reality is, it's just like the hood. Music is just like the hood. These young black kids gonna respect money and power. And the reality is that all y'all got money, but the labels made it seem like none of us have the power. Mm-hmm. So my real saying is that we need y'all back, man. Like Chris, we need you back. Dion, you in there, but we need y'all back, and we need hip hop. We need y'all back, man. Like, these young kids are not getting taught. They're getting offered millions of dollars with no knowledge. They're getting college. They're getting basically NBA money with no college and no coaches and no nothing.
No agents.
So, no, nothing. It's like, bro, it's like we literally have lost our culture, bro. It's like, it's sad to watch. Like, I came in this game and I don't do nothing without thinking about how my OG's going to feel. How they going to feel about this record I put out? Are they going to laugh at me? Are they going to make fun of me? Nigga, you signed that. Nigga, you did that. We don't have that no more, bro. We don't have no pride in our building. We don't have no history. It's like, yeah, we don't have the superstar. It's funny because I tell people, I'm like I'm senior vice president at a label. But I remember when I was trying to get in the game. If you seen Shakir, vice president of Def Jam, that shit was like wearing a Superman on your chest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. Chris Hicks, EVP of Def Jam, is like, nigga, you coming in with a gold suit on. Now you don't even want to tell people you do A&R because it's like, oh, nigga, what you gonna do? Take it to your boss and hope he like it so he can give me a check? And then you ain't got no power? Like, we gotta get this shit gotta change, man. And, like, we need y'all back. Chris, we need you to come back.
Chris said, I'm good.
If it was that easy, man, they'll open up. They'll start
them. Shot. It's about to be that easy. It's going to be that easy. Let me, like, how, when you said I left Def Jam when 2 Chainz clowned me, or he said this line about you being a police officer and whatever, I can't remember the line, but in my mind, it's like they wanted the artists to clown y'all to look like y'all had no power so y'all could leave and they could run the fucking asylum. Like, all right, they mine now. Now I don't have no black people around telling them how they can be rich and successful and be smart. I want this to be bullshit so we can lose. So we can control. This shit is all about control, man. Mm-hmm. So we need y'all back, man. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, bro, there's nothing.
I will report to any one of y'all anytime. Shaw, when I was at Epic with you, you know I brought my records to you every time. What you think?
That's right.
Like, I will report to any one of y'all, and I feel like I know a whole lot of shit, but I will report to any one of y'all because y'all got stories and y'all got history, and I respect it. Only problem is, I mean, all y'all made all y'all money, but it's like, we need the power now. Fuck the money.
We gotta change the narrative, man. It's very
I'm
Ray.
I'm with you.
Let me tell you something. You got the hottest niggas on the planet, right? Or at least some of them, right? But the reason why you would come and work for all of us, because you know we wasn't in the hold you down business. We were in the growth business. We were in the prosper business. And in corporate America, all of us are in the growth business and all of them are in the maintenance business. It's oil and water, my brother. So if people want to go back into the growth business, I think everybody on this line is mine is completely open. But nobody wants to run laps and not lose no weight. Like, nobody wants to put the grind in and not prosper when you know. I'm great at name call right now. You guys know who Dan McCarroll is?
Yes.
Right? Yeah. And I'm not asking nobody to say nothing, but I am asking you to tell me which artist he broke. That's my point. So, but he's been a chieftain at all of these different companies. How does that work? How does that happen? How does that
work? That's real.
And Ray, when you get there, which you will get there, right? But you're gonna be sitting on this call just like us, and you're gonna have your money, and you're gonna be explaining to somebody how you wouldn't get to deal with all that bullshit when you didn't have to.
Nah, I listen, Chris. I quit Interscope because Joey IE literally shitted on me at Interscope, wouldn't let me get nothing off. How the fuck is he still a gatekeeper in our culture? How is call names, let's be honest. How does DJ not help nothing unless he's making money from it, still have a job and not hip hop? Who, like, I don't get it. But it's because they control
it. Oh, you get it. You get it.
No, listen, what I'm trying to
hold your hand up and look at your hand. Look at the skin color on your hand.
I know, but you know what it was though. But what I figured out, Chris, like what I figured out was our culture is so focused on money that we don't understand what power is.
Right. So I don't all the way agree with that, right? Because some of us played the game.
We make the money, but we don't got the power.
Some of us played the game, and the trap was still the trap. You know what I mean?
Like you, because you did some historic shit. I get it, but I think the time is now where they gotta listen. So if they gotta listen, like if they gotta listen, nigga, we should be talking more about. Like I posted on my fucking IG in open. Why shocking our president of Def Jam? Fuck that. Like stop. Like they know it's like we afraid to say what it is because we don't want to get punished. But it's like, bro, this is our shit.
Oh, there's no punishment for me. Yeah, you're right.
If we had our heroes in power, we would be unbeatable.
That's why your heroes are not in power, because they don't want you to be unbeatable.
Ray, can you see me?
I can see you.
This is what we got to fix before we can really fix what you're saying.
You're right.
That's what we got to fix, man.
Yeah.
You're right. That's the problem,
but you know,
for real.
Because
if we was together, listen, this is broke. If we was together... And not doing that, we wouldn't be talking about this.
I agree. But I feel like now more than ever, I think this is the most time we've ever been together. So now we need to do that.
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to get on there and say. Like, we need to do that shit. Like, we need to fucking talk. We need to fucking say how we feel. And it's like, I feel like I'm fighting niggas that my big brother should be fighting. Like,
I feel you on that.
Like I'm fighting right
now. I get that.
Like, mm-hmm. I feel like I'm fighting people. I'm fighting the system that... If Sean Money was in the room, they wouldn't talk to me like I didn't know what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. If Dion was in the room, they wouldn't talk to me like I know what I'm talking about. Because they know they're going to beat my ass if anything. Hey, that's how
but
I feel.
You want to know? You want to know something funny? When I first started, Chris, was you were still there when I first started?
I had left. I was gone by then.
He just left. Chris had just left. Sean Money was in the room. Dream was in the room. Mm-hmm. Boo was in the room. Khaled was in the room. Mm-hmm. Like, it was, man, I worked with some people that have done amazing stuff after that room.
<That's>
You get what I'm saying? I'm just keeping it a buck.
That's real.
Saying, yo, and we look at each other and go like, yo, was it the room? what happened? How?
Yep.
How?
System.
So wasn't we got the leader. It wasn't the leader. It wasn't the boss. I tell you that.
The fuck wasn't.
You know what I'm saying?
Hey, let me tell you something. And when I was at Def Jam, nothing happened that no leadership didn't break shit. Not one record. Didn't break 2 Chainz. Didn't break YG. Didn't break Bieber. It was almost like it was confusing. It was flat out confusing to me. Didn't break Big Sean.
That was
none of the artists that broke were broken with leadership's leadership. None of them.
Yeah, but the new generation, they're going to jump past wanting to be executives and go right to wanting to be CEOs now. Because they're not looking at it like, yo, I can go be the top of the company, because those opportunities don't really exist in their eyes.
They're not for us.
They'd rather be the Birdman or, you know what I'm saying, or that big CEO guy, because that's what they see. And that's good. You know what I mean? Because right now, this is where we're going to how we level it by ownership and having our own shit. And that's what we're going to have to start doing completely across the board.
Yes, that's like, really the combo, Ray.
I don't want $100 million donation. I want $100 million budget for us to run our own labels and control our own shit. That'll change the world, not $100 million donation. Completely. I don't want no free lunch. I want, right. And for me, it's like nobody's saying that. Everybody's like, let's celebrate. They just gave us money. Fuck their money. Give me my
power. But did you see the, did you see the sign that he just held up? Did you see the picture he just held up?
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the people that are celebrating that.
Yeah. Well, we here on the front line, we want to see the accountability, man.
I'm an Atlanta guy. I've been in Atlanta since I started. I'm driving to my house in Atlanta. So maybe that's why I'm not fit. That's not why I'm not afraid. But I'm so tired of the suckers in the building kissing ass. I'm so tired of suckers in the building being nice. Like, I'm the person that they don't even throw nothing my way, because I'm like, I'm going to tell the truth. I don't give a fuck, because my mind is like, I'm going to have to see one of these little niggas in the street, and they're not going to think I'm a sucker when they see me and want to hurt me because I told them some lie. Y'all not going to have me lie to my people. I can't be bought.
You still, and you know, you still got to be you at the end of the day. But you were you before you got to a building. You're going to be you after a building. And for most of your peers that work inside these buildings, the buildings are their existence.
Like, bro, I'm in a meeting, and one of the white A&Rs plays a Filipino kid who's yelling nigga the whole song. And you know me, I'm doing my black count. Like, how many, I don't see no dark-skinned niggas in this video. He got a whole bunch of mixed kids with him. So they like, and Hook had nigga in it. And I'm like, yo, that dude gonna get hurt. Well, you know, his dad is 1/4 black. Look at me, the fact that you could say that to me, my nigga, look at me, my nigga.
There's money in death, right?
No. I'm saying that after I said that, they put that shit away. That right. Kid didn't get into his music, didn't come up again. So what I'm saying is that I'm not afraid to call y'all the fuck out. None of them out. Because my mind is like, y'all not got me here to be a black face, nigga. I'm not that nigga's going to smile for y'all. And y'all not either. So I'm saying that now while everybody's saying black people, black music, what do y'all want? Nigga, we want our OGs in place. We want our shit back. That's what we want.
That's what we want back. And that's where I'm going to leave that. Because that felt like that was the ending of the conversation. We want our OGs back.
We want our OGs back, nigga. I'm watching this fucking shit like I'm watching the playoffs. I ain't seen sports in 3 months. I ain't never been so excited to watch no shit until this right here. Just hearing Deion and Chris and Hip Hop and Shot Talk. Oh, my God, nigga, we need this back. I got to office more.
So just remember this, Ray. Django wanted his girl back. Went to Candyland and was met by Steven Jackson, right. Samuel Jackson, and he went through hell to get that girl back, right?
He sure did.
And guess what he had to do at the end?
Kill some niggas, kill a lot of motherfuckers.
Yeah.
So who we need to, what we doing?
We need to start a black music motherfucking union. We need to make our demands. And we need to tell them this is our shit and this is how I got to go. And if they say no, they got to say no in front of everybody.
Yep. Right. So the future artists can know. So the future artists can know, man.
So listen, bro. I don't want to come in the room and smile no more when you want me to sign a black artist and say, hi, nigga, I don't want that. I'm not doing that no more. I ain't coming in there. No. Mm-hmm. Nigga, we need to have a union where we need to, and I feel like Jay-Z should lead the motherfucker because they afraid of his ass more than anybody in the world because he's the black owner, period. Like, we need to have a union of black executives that say what we want, and this is how it's going to go, and they're going to follow it, period. I'll be on the front line with no mask on. Nigga, look at my face, nigga.
Ray.
You don't find me now because I'm telling you I want my people to run our culture. You don't like me anyway.
All right.
Don't get Ray, the wrong about that mask. You've completely made my evening.
Ray Daniels. you know Ray Daniels, hey, man, always got something to say.
Right.
Hey, man, y'all my OGs, man. I look up to all y'all. I didn't have faith. I could tell you the first thing I ever said to all y'all because that's how bad I wanted y'all to know my name. And, nigga, I'm still keeping that energy. Y'all going to be proud of me by the end of this shit because I'm no sucker and I'm no motherfucking sellout. I promise y'all that.
That's right,
bro.
Appreciate it, bro.
That's right, man.
Yeah. You got us. Your OGs is here, baby.
We'll see you next week, Ray.
My nigga.
All right. Well, I feel like that's a good way to end the conversation, which can actually continue to go on and on and on, but it's already been 2 hours, and it's been a lot of information, a lot of great information to digest. Yeah, I know. Listen, when you got this type of group together, you got to extract as much as possible. It's not every day you get, listen, I don't know the last time I've seen y'all in a room together, virtual or otherwise.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nah.
Shit. So wanted to make sure we got as much information as possible. I want to thank everybody for tapping in. I want to thank Hip Hop. I want to thank No ID. I want to thank Sha Money. I want to thank Chris Hicks for imparting all your wisdom. It was a great conversation, and that's all I got.
Hey, Eddie, thank you for having us, man. I appreciate it.
Keep it real Wednesday. Keep it real Wednesday right here, man.
I love it.
I'm going to call all y'all, try to figure out how to get rich.
There you go.
Yo, bless y'all. Stay up, y'all. Love, man.
I'm a brother. All right.